This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Good morning. You're listening to WRFL 88.1 Lexington, and this is the professor filling in for Mick Jeffries on Trivial Thursdays, and I've got a special guest with us here this morning. This is Cagney from the Nerd Squad. So thanks so much for joining us this morning, Cagney.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And you tell me this is your first time on the radio, huh?
Yeah.
How is it so far?
I mean, it's okay.
In the swanky studio here at WRFL, we really run it first class here. So Cagney, what is the Nerd Squad?
The Nerd Squad is a STEM nonprofit. We kind of design and develop these science, technology, engineering, and math activities, and then we go out into the community and get kids excited about learning and critical thinking and science and all that cool stuff.
Cool. How long have you been involved with the Nerd Squad?
The Nerd Squad is 5 years old, so I've been doing it for 5 years.
Oh, are you the founder? Or?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's great. Very cool. What got you excited to do that?
Well, I'm actually a scientist. So.
Very good. Very good.
And you don't get to see like a lot of girls that look like me doing science. And mm-hmm. So it's because they don't really know like that girls that look like them do this. And we're cool and we're smart and we're taking over the world. So we got to show them.
So what kind of scientist are you, Cagney?
I'm a molecular biologist.
Wow. Okay. Fair enough. And... Fair enough. And did you go to school here at UK or somewhere else?
I'm getting my PhD here now.
Oh, great. Okay, in molecular biology.
Yes.
I take it. So what exactly is molecular biology?
It's where basically I study different genes and how they affect the eye and the development of the eye. So I study it from a gene level, from the molecular level.
Wow. And so how have you found time to put together a nonprofit and do all this work with kids while you yourself are in school like this?
Well, first, Nerd Squad was established before I started graduate school. So like all the real hard work, mm-hmm. the always on the grind part of it was kind of starting to settle down, and we were actually like becoming like a solid nonprofit by the time I got to grad school.
Okay. And is this the first nonprofit you've been involved with or that you've started? Or?
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Wow. Have you found it to be a struggle to keep it going while you're in school, or compliments between the two? Or
no, I have an amazing team. Like the people who represent my squad, well, first of all, high schoolers actually go out and execute these activities. So
okay.
We design them. I have a team of people like this guy, Justin. He's actually a STEM education PhD student here.
Okay.
And then I have a robotics engineer. And we all come together and we put these activities together. Then we teach it to the kids, to the high schoolers, and then they kind of decide how they want to teach it to the littler kids, and we practice and they go through it and they come up with their lesson plan, and then they go out into the community and they become the mentors and they develop the relationships and they show that you could be cool and smart and all that stuff.
So it's sort of a combination of teaching and learning
for
the participants, huh?
For everybody involved, because I even learn a lot of stuff myself.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, just to make it a little bit more concrete, maybe you could, like, describe what a particular project or a particular activity or a particular lesson might look like, and you know, what you might do and what the participants might actually do in the context of engaging with the actual program?
So let's see, what's one of our favorites? Okay, so one of our most, one of the ones we like a lot is we do this CSI activity where we teach them all these, we teach the kids all these forensic science techniques, so they learn fingerprinting and fiber analysis and blood typing and ink chromatography. And then as they're learning all of this stuff, they learn about like how in real life, you see it on TV, it only happens in 50 minutes, but in real life, the process of investigating a crime is a long process, and they have to collect clues and solve this mystery. And then after they've collected the clues and they've solved the mystery, then we have this mock court trial where they get to decide if they want to be prosecutor or defense, or do they want to be like an expert in ink chromatography and get on the stand and defend that, or do they want to be the actual suspect or one of the other suspects. And then they go through the whole process of having a trial and all of this, and it just brings like the whole science to full circle. Like, it just doesn't stop at the science. There's a point to all of this, and as you learn these steps, you got to be critically thinking about the evidence that you're taking in and what do you think it could lead to. And like the high schoolers, they kind of like engage the conversation and keep the kids thinking about the things that they're doing as they're doing it. So as they collect clues, they're like, so what do you think? Who thinks it could be this person? Why? What about this evidence makes you go that direction? And they kind of like move it along and, you know, talk about it too. And the first couple of times that they've done this, I didn't even tell like the high schoolers who the actual guilty party is, so that everybody is learning and nobody knows who the person is. It keeps them, like the kids can't ask a lot of questions, like, who do you think it is? And they're all like, we don't know, we try to figure it out right along with you. Come on, we gotta get these clues.
It's like they're participating in their own individual games of Serial or something. Yes. Like that, huh? Really. It sounds like it helps them not just get excited about science, but also understand why it matters and why it's important.
And like, it also like engages the thinking process. So in all of these environments, it's never a right or wrong. Like, you can't be right or you can't necessarily be wrong. It's just that if you have an idea, bring it to life, show it to me. Why do you think that? If you can give me some evidence of why you think that, I'm going to end with, that's really interesting. We have to investigate that, you know, something like that. No, that's crazy. That could never happen. Like, I would never engage it that way. It's like,
awesome. Well, I'm talking with Cagney from the Nerd Squad, and we'll be back after a brief track and some words from our sponsors, as it were. All right, welcome back. I'm here today with Cagney from the Nerd Squad. This is the professor filling in for Mick Jeffries on this trivialist of trivial Thursdays. And Cagney, you were just telling us about sort of an example of one of these really cool programs that you've been running now at the Nerd Squad for about 5 years, helping get kids excited about science. About how many kids participate or have participated in your programs, if you know?
I can't tell you how many. I have no clue. Yeah. I can tell you that we collaborate with almost every major university in the state of Kentucky. We're in 4 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, 2 high schools. We collaborate with BCTC. We go to all kinds of like events that the city hosts. We love to work with Be Bold. Like, we do just about.
Wow. So I guess the answer to that question would be
a lot.
An awful lot.
Yes.
That's amazing.
A lot.
That's amazing. Wow. Wow. And so all throughout Kentucky then, huh?
Mm-hmm.
All the different colleges, all a bunch of different high schools. That's really impressive. And what do you think the kids find most, or you know, in your experience, what gets the kids most excited about the programming? I mean, was there like a special sauce that you found in developing the programs or in putting the organization together that sort
of? I think
of,
it's the high schoolers.
Yeah.
I think that they're closer to their age, but I mean, I think the high schoolers are cool. So, I mean, sometimes I'm just like in amazement at how amazing they are and how hard they work and how much ownership they take of it. So, like, if you sat down and had a conversation with them, you would say, what is the Nerd Squad to them? They would laugh and say, we're the Nerd Squad. Not, what is the Nerd Squad? Uh-huh. We're the Nerd Squad. And when you see them engaged, they built these bonds with these kids. Like, they love them. They love when the Nerd Squad comes. I never have sent my team someplace and somebody not send me back. Like, your team is amazing. What they do is amazing. How they do it is amazing. And, like, the development of it is kind of like, Justin and I will teach it to them how we would see it happen, or if we're teaching it, how we would execute it. And then they come up with their own way to execute it. So although they learn from us, they actually get to kind of develop it themselves and how they want to deliver it and what they think is important. We always make them focus on, like, what is the take-home message that you want the kids to get from this? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the big picture? Paint the big picture, give them details. And they work really hard at that. We train for 4 hours every Sunday. Like, we have dinner together. Like, it's a family thing. We do a lot of team building. So we build a lot. Like, we go hiking and we go out to different events and things that they could get exposure from. I try mm-hmm. to make sure that they get some. They've come to my lab. They get to see what I do. They get to see what Justin does. Or Justin gets to have unique experiences. Like, they have a 3D printing machine over there. Now that they got it up and running, like, he keeps, like, calling, when we bring in the high schoolers over, they have to see this. This is amazing. They're going to love it, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's because the things that we're passionate about and us older ones, we get to expose them to those kind of things too. So it's things they never got to see. So it's kind of like mm-hmm. we're all getting to win.
You mentioned Justin. Who's Justin?
Justin is a STEM education PhD student here at UK. And so he's like, I like the science and the activity part, but he helps me hone it in and give it a lesson. And he's helped me create these critical thinking environments that we create when we go out into these mm-hmm. schools or the neighborhoods and stuff.
Have you been collaborating with Justin the whole 5 years you've been working on the program, or is he someone you brought on later in the process?
Justin's been a part of the program about 2.5, almost 3 years now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And was that something that you saw as the director, as like a need for someone who could collaborate with you?
I didn't even know I needed it until he was there. And then I was like, oh my God, where have you been? We needed you. Like,
yeah, I mean, isn't that always how it is?
Yeah, you
right?
don't know what you don't know until you don't know.
The unknown unknowns,
yes.
as it were. So as I listen to you describe the program, it sounds like something that's sort of occupies a significant amount of time and has a real presence in a lot of the participants' life. I mean, when you engage particular young people in the Nerd Squad programs, about how long are they involved with it for?
Well, so we also have a tutoring program that meets on Tuesdays and Thursdays, mm-hmm. and we like do tutoring. It's called the Learning Community because you have to be a student to be involved. So there's elementary, middle, high school, undergrad, and graduate students, and we're all coming together to support each other. So the high schoolers tutor the middle and elementary, the undergrads tutor the high schoolers, the graduate students tutor the undergrads, and those graduate students are just holding on to each other, staying afloat in mm-hmm. this life of graduate school. That's crazy. So it's kind of like all of us building each other up together. And of course, we eat. So anything that's like Nerd Squad involved is like always like some kind of meal involved mm-hmm. because when you're sitting down together and you're having a meal, you have a conversation, and we eat with the kids that we tutor because that gives them a chance to tell us all of the stuff that goes on in school they want to tell us about. You know, when we're tutoring, we want to focus on that part. But there's this opening, like, don't worry, when this is over, you can talk to me for 30 minutes while we eat dinner together and tell me all about your teacher and your friends and what went on at school and all the different amazing things that are going on. So a lot of kids, we meet them in the classroom and we build a relationship with them through the school year because we come there once a week, and then they kind of just trickle into our tutoring program. And so a lot of them I see 3 or 4 times a week because I come to their classroom for an hour on Wednesdays, then they're there on Tuesday and Thursday. And, like, a lot of the smaller girls, they look up to the bigger girls, like, a lot. Mm-hmm. So, like, if we go hiking or any of that and there's space, you know, we'll call a couple of smaller mini nerds is what we call them. Like, you want to go hiking with the big girls? Yeah. So then mm-hmm. I'll see them doing that. And mm-hmm. so It comes like almost every day.
Okay, and so to clarify, the program is specifically directed at girls then, or?
No, the program is, so in our tutoring program, we have boys and girls. Okay. Even in like in the classroom, it's in all the kids in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess girls just latch on. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It seems like girls are really like prone to want to stick around and take mm-hmm. part in it and take ownership. So, right. I mean, right. I don't turn away anybody.
Right, right. Do you think that the enthusiasm of the girls you see for the program is a result of your enthusiasm and participation, or, you know, maybe the fact that this is like the first kind of opportunity they've had to do something like this, or a combination of the two, or some other things, or what do you think that is?
I mean, I'm pretty excited person. So
yeah, I've noticed.
I am a pretty excited person, like in general. Uh-huh. So that could possibly be some, but I think that more than anything, it's kind of the ownership of it, like that it's theirs. Mm-hmm. You know, it is. They get to like claim it and have it, and it's theirs. Can nobody take it away from them?
Do you think that the teaching element of it especially appeals to some of the female students, or?
I think the mentoring element of it, like getting to like have somebody look up to you, I think that it's an amazing feeling anyway. So I'm sure that it's like, yeah, I like that. I've seen a lot of girls go from maybe getting a little bit trouble every now and then to really focused and determined and headstrong. And I kind of harness that in, you know, like, because I'm really like a real headstrong kind of person. So it doesn't bother me too much. Mm-hmm. At all, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm here talking with Cagney from the Nerd Squad, and we're going to take a little break and we'll be back and talk some more about her programming and perhaps how listeners might be able to get involved. So, good morning and welcome to WRFL 88.1 Lexington. I'm the professor and I'm filling in for Mick Jeffries' Trivial Thursdays. I'm here with Cagney from the Nerd Squad. And Cagney's been telling us all about the amazing science education and mentorship programs that the Nerd Squad has been running for children of all ages, really. I mean, what are the youngest participants in these programs, do you think?
Kindergarten.
Wow. So kindergarten all the way up through high school. And
it well, sounds this like summer they're working with some pre-K students over at William Wells Brown.
Wow.
It's the day. And yes. Well, Tuesday and Thursday they did this week.
Wow. Wow.
So Tuesday and Wednesday.
Developing like lesson plans and concepts for such a range of kids must have been a huge endeavor. I mean, really, it sounds like you're running from 4 to 5 years old all the way up through, as I understand it, like even some younger college students.
Yeah, but it's actually, you'd be surprised how lack of like science concept understanding that these students, that a lot of students have. So I can like take the same lesson and add more detail and teach it to a high schooler, take away some of that detail and just paint a big picture and teach that to a smaller kid, but it's the same lesson. Mm-hmm. It can just be like engaged in different ways. Like when I teach high schoolers, I make them do research. Like I want you to go out there and I want you to investigate. What I'm saying could be true, but do you know that for sure? Are you just believing that because I said it?
Mm-hmm.
So I could tell you right now that the sky is purple and you're going to say, okay, because I said it, or are you going to do some research? So I kind of like push them to do research, and they always have to like look up vocabulary words and understand the concepts and, you know, really engage in it. Whereas a smaller kid, we want to get to that place, but first we want you to like have some curiosity and we want to spark that. But at the same time, we want to keep fueling the imagination and understanding that we can't tamper that either. We have to like encourage that and manipulate that and work with that and show them how the imagination can help you engage and how it enhances the experience. So like when the little kids, you should see, like when I do CSI with them, they come up with conspiracy theories and all kinds of stuff. You're like, oh Lord, y'all watch a lot of TV. But we go with it, and we'll have a mock trial about the whole conspiracy theory because that's what they think the evidence points to, and they got to tell me why, and they'll tell me why they think that, and it'll just, you know.
Wow, this is great. I mean, I somehow I think my law students could benefit from some of these programs. So it sounds like you're already involved with a huge number of students around the state, but I'm kind of wondering for listeners, if if they have kids who they think might be interested in a program like yours, you know, how do kids typically get involved? And are there ways that parents can get their children involved in your programs?
High schoolers, we're always looking for high schoolers. We always need tutors. A lot of them start out as tutors, and then as they start to grow and learn and get more engaged, then they spread out and want more of a role. Mm-hmm. So to me, for high schoolers, tutoring is the opening gate. And so they come to tutor training, they get trained, they get CLA certified, which is College Learning Association. So even when they leave there, they leave with a certification that they could take the college in charge to tutor. You know, something that's tangible, because we don't have any money because we're a nonprofit. But we can give something tangible that's a skill that goes on a resume that's beneficial to a high schooler to use. And then for the smaller kids, if you see, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram. We're always posting like where our stuff is going to be and what we're going to be doing. And you just come. It's free. There's never like, we never charge for anything. So all the events are always free.
Cool. So where would people go to find out about your program? I assume that the organization has a website.
Oh, it's still in construction. Building a website is really hard work, you know.
It is, and it's expensive, and it's
unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's hard to get one that works the way you want it to.
But it's under construction, okay. Hopefully soon. But you can find us on Facebook, just all caps Nerd Squad.
Okay, so Facebook Nerd Squad. Is there an email that people can write to for information?
nerd.squadotg@gmail.com.
Excellent. So this is Cagney from the Nerd Squad, and she's telling us all about the fantastic programs that she's been running for going on 5 years now for kids ranging from pre-K all the way up through college, helping them learn about and get excited about science and science education, both by engaging with scientific investigation and activity and thinking, and also, and it sounds like really importantly, by mentoring their peers about how they can engage in those kinds of activities as well. So thanks so much, Cagney, for coming on the show today. And maybe just repeat one more time the Facebook and email addresses if listeners are interested in getting involved with or perhaps sending their own kids to Nerd Squad programs.
Facebook is Nerd Squad, all caps, and the email is nerd.squadotg@gmail.com.
Okay, thanks so much, Cagney. It's been really a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for
having me. Okay, bye-bye.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Good morning, Wilson, WRFL 88.1 Lexington. I'm the professor, and I'm filling in for Mick Jeffries on this most trivial of trivial Thursdays. And I've got three very special guests here in the station with me today, Kristen, Amanda, and John. So let's start with the first guest on my left. Kristen, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and why you all three are here today?
Yeah, good morning. I'm Kristen Voskel. I'm with the Living Arts and Science Center. And I brought Amanda and John with me today to talk about a very special art exhibition that we have at the center. It's a digital interactive art exhibit, and they're the experts on the exhibit, so they can tell you all about the special works we have there. But I have done some of the things, and it is super fun.
Cool. Well, why don't we let Amanda and John describe the project, and then we can swing back to you to talk about why you found it so compelling.
Sure,
and
yeah,
to describe to the viewers a little bit about, or the potential visitors, some of what it might actually be like to experience.
Great.
It. So,
Hello, I'm John. And so we're with a group called Run Jump Dev. It's a nonprofit here in Lexington, Kentucky. And, our goal is to help the video game industry grow and sort of interactive art to grow in Lexington and in Kentucky. And so this is our second annual Rules and Play exhibit, and it's the idea of giving people in Lexington the opportunity to experience sort of these digital interactive works that, you know, are less common. And so we partnered up with the Living Arts and Science Center to have, you know, lots of great works available, having some classes to talk about, you know, how these things work and learn how that, how you can make your own, and then just have a lot of fun, you know, together. So.
And I guess we should clarify what exactly we mean by, like, digital interactive. I guess we should clarify by that, because it's, some of it's like what you would consider classically games, so like clicking and stuff, but there's also LED light sculptures and a couple of other things like that, so sort of non-traditional gaming stuff, some gaming stuff, but it's all art.
Yeah, it's really nice. We have sort of a range of things, so maybe more traditional sculpture kind of things, all the way into like virtual reality projects that people can play, you know, putting on headsets and tracking gear to like move around in a virtual space, which is more maybe like a mainstream video game.
But it's all stuff you can touch, basically, and it's all stuff you can interact with. You're supposed to interact with it. It kind of only works if you interact with it.
Yeah, it's sort of that line between a video games and, you know, art and sculpture and some kind of mishmash of all those different things. And so it's really great to kind of see a broad range of projects, you know, that people can try out and have fun with.
So. Cool. So maybe, John and Amanda, maybe you could describe specifically one of the projects in the show that you think is especially exciting to you or especially representative of what you're trying to accomplish.
I mean, Amanda, you can describe yours. You
yeah, know, one I'm one of the exhibiting artists. Mine is an LED light sculpture that is a series of hanging pieces of what's called flagging tape. It's thin strips of non-adhesive tape, hangs down, and when you touch it, it changes color. So the whole structure changes color, and you lay down, and it's actually a small princess bed. So you lay down in that, and you can touch the strands as they're hanging, and it'll change color. And I've been told it's a very soothing experience.
Cool. Sounds great. And yeah. And John.
So I don't have one in the exhibit, but I have I don't know, a couple favorites. I think Line Wobbler is a really great one. It's where it's from an artist in England called Robin Baumgartner, and he took a LED light strip and connected a doorstop that, you know, they kind of wobble, they're like metal spring. And what you do is you kind of move an LED like green dot up and down this LED strip, and we've got it hung. So there's a great new space at the Living Arts and Science Center, new glow gallery. And so we have the LEDs going up, you know, 15, 20 feet in this glass window that's at the beginning opening of their gallery. And you kind of move this little green dot back and forth and try to avoid enemies.
It's a one-dimensional dungeon crawler.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. So it's kind of, instead of moving back and forth and moving around, you're just kind of moving back and forth, and you wobble this, you know, doorstop thing to kind of attack and avoid dangers and things like that. So it really shows well in the space, because it goes up that great window in the front and glows and makes all kinds of fun noise, and it's really a lot of fun.
It's visually really dramatic.
Yeah, definitely, especially in the evenings. So.
And we're really glad to get it. He's exhibited, Robin's exhibited at a bunch of international conventions, and he sent it to us, so we're really excited about that.
That's cool. How many pieces are going to be in the show?
So, I'm trying to think.
It is 11 artists, but I think there's 12 pieces.
I think it's 13. There's 13 sort of that are... So we have like 9 that are set up permanently for the 2 months at the Living Arts and Science Center, and then on July 15th, then we're going to have additional ones that are set up and that are maybe more complicated that we can't just leave out. So those are sort of like virtual reality projects, and
one's a soundscape kind of thing, and then right. I think.
And then we have one that's in the planetarium. So the Living Arts and Science Center has a great dome projection planetarium system. And so one of the artists has made a project that works with the dome, and you move around and interact with it. So those are hard to just keep out and running. So we are going to have those on the July 15th as well. So,
which is a gallery hop, by the way, July 15th.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Thanks. So, Kristen, maybe you could share something with our listeners about what got you excited about this particular show, and if there are particular pieces in the show that you'd like to share with any of the readers.
Well, I think it's interesting. Some of the artists are from around the world. What is it, 3 countries and 6 states, something like that? Yeah. And there's not a show like this in Kentucky. This is really original. This idea of digital art is kind of burgeoning and new. And it's really interactive, and the kids that we have at the center and the adults alike just really like being a part of, you know, trying out different things. So we're excited about that. But also at the opening, they had virtual reality games, which I had never had the opportunity to try before. And that was just exciting and fun.
What was the experience like? Can you describe, you know, what you saw and what it was like to try out those games?
Sure. So the one that I tried, I don't think was the coolest one. So you guys might have to fill in the other one, because I didn't get to try it.
So if you go to the actual show, it'll be even better.
It'll be even better than what I'm about to tell you. But it was a headset, and when I put it on, I was immersed in this world of Arctic art. I don't know. Inuit art?
Inuit art.
Okay. And so you like start out in a museum, and you can kind of see the pieces, and then it moves you into the real world of the pieces that you see in the museum. That's the best way I can describe it. But it was awesome, because you could, you know, everywhere you looked, it was like you were in the world. Uh-huh. But like I said, there's cooler ones, because the one that I had was I was just looking, but then there's ones where you interact. So it's tracing your movement, and so you're actually interacting with the pieces in the game, which...
Yeah, so the piece she's describing is a piece called Art Alive by a collective out of Canada called Penguok. And they take classic Inuit art, and they gamify the experiences, and they allow you to step inside those paintings. And so that piece specifically is a VR headset experience where you sit inside of it and you can look around, and you get sort of a 360 view of being inside that painting. That artist also has a couple iPad games that we're also showing. And there's 2 other VR experiences. One of them is a musical garden, and which I haven't played. I think John.
No, I haven't had a chance to play it. It's great because there's so many people that want to try it out. We just haven't had a chance to.
Right.
Yeah, that's been my experience of virtual reality stuff. Is the lines get really long really fast, huh?
Yeah.
So we have 2 of those set upstairs where they.
Well, 3 with Penguok.
Yeah, well, yeah, with Penguok. But there's 2 upstairs that will be. Sort of allows you, they use the HTC Vive, which allows you to sort of move around in a, you know, 15 by 15 space, and it tracks, you know, your movement around, walking around. You can kind of bend down, pick things up, sort of. And so it's really great because it takes, you know, the experience that Kristen, you know, had was kind of just looking around, but this takes it to the next level of being able to walk around and, you know, interact with everything. So it's pretty amazing kind of experience.
And it's good for all ages. I mean, there were kids there that were enjoying it, and adults as well. So really the whole show, it's a great experience. Bring the family, and everybody will find something that they love.
Yeah, for me, the cool thing is that when we show virtual reality at, like, non-gaming events, people who would otherwise not get a chance to try it, because these are kind of expensive. Like, that's the big cost problem right now, is that the Vive is $800 plus a $1,200 computer. Like, your average household isn't going to have one. So it was really cool seeing people who otherwise wouldn't get a chance to try it experiencing it for the first time.
Awesome. So I'm here with guests from the Living Arts and Sciences Center and Runjub Devon. We'll be back again just a minute after the break and a little musical interlude. Good morning, Ilson WRFL 88.1 Lexington. I'm the professor filling in for Mick Jeffries on this trivial Thursday, and I'm here with Kristen from the Living Arts and Sciences Center, Amanda and John from Run Jump Dev, who currently have a show up there. And Kristen was just telling us a little bit about selecting and programming this particular show, and John and Amanda were describing it. And Kristen, you mentioned you had some programs you wanted to share with our listeners.
Yeah, so in conjunction with the show, we're offering some teen and adult classes at the center. And they are kind of building on this video gaming idea. So, Amanda, I know you just taught a class last week, right? And we have two more coming up, and registration is open for those. Can you tell a little bit about the specifics of the class?
I can tell you a bit about my class. I taught a class on interactive fiction using a specific engine called Twine. The idea is sort of those old choose your own adventure books from when you were a kid. They have a program now that makes you allows you to create them in sort of a digital space. So we had that class for a week, and I believe John is teaching the other two, which have a bit more exciting.
Yeah, the other two classes are about sort of world building 3D worlds that can then be projected onto the planetarium. So we're working with the artist Al Baker, who did the planetarium project, and using a game engine called Unity, and going to teach people how to create a world and how to move the camera through that world, and then that view can then be projected up on the planetarium. And then we're also going to do another project or another set of classes on the Kinect. So if you've ever played the Xbox Kinect, where you can kind of move around and interact, and the computer or the Xbox uses cameras and infrared technology to kind of track where you are, where your hands are, where you're looking. And so what we're going to do is allow people to learn about those things, develop their own kind of experiences that use the Kinect. And so those are all kinds of things that are very similar to what people are doing in the show. So several of the artwork pieces that we have use Unity, and so we're going to try to give an introductory kind of class about, you know, Unity and those two things, so that they can maybe try it out and get into making their own digital works. So.
Do you have to have experience, John, to take a class?
Or? The idea of these are introductory things, so you don't have to have any experience. We'll actually kind of show you how to download the software, you know, and get access to it, and then like get it set up so you can start making things. And then we'll have example, you know, assets like 3D models and things that you can start with, so that you're not kind of you need to learn a bunch of stuff. We can get you kind of introduced and expose you to what it's about. And then if you're interested in really going further, that's where you can kind of get involved with our group, with Run Jump Dev, and just you know, come to meetings and talk to other people and you know, make digital works or video games, whatever you're interested in.
If listeners want to take a class, how would they go about signing up for one? And how many sessions are the classes, and how long are they?
So probably the easiest is going to rulesandplay.org, and we've got all the classes there, and that links over to the Living Arts and Science Center. And I'm trying to think. So the
My class was a week, Monday through Friday. I know that the one of your classes meets every Thursday.
Yeah, so
for
the,
like 5 weeks.
Yeah, so like July 7th through July 28th, and that's the that's in the evening, and it's a Xbox Kinect one, and that's sort of for, you know, teens to adults. And then the other one is from July 11th through the 15th, and that's you know, sort of in the afternoon. And again, that's for kind of ninth to grade up, you know, kind of age group, to adults if they're available to go. And so they can just go to rulesandplay.org and kind of get the links to register and get involved.
Cool. So I'm thinking about all of these kids at home for the summer on their games, you know, tied to their phones and their games. And this is a good way to come out and sort of expand your knowledge about those games and how they're built and how you can create your own and, you know, maybe spark a career idea or something.
Cool. Amanda, you just finished teaching your class.
Yeah.
Could you describe to the listeners a little bit about, you know, what the experience was like, what the class was like, and maybe some of the projects or some of the work that your students did in the class?
It's an interesting experience. I don't interact a lot with kids. It's not in my wheelhouse of like experience, so that was really interesting. We had just a handful of students for that class, which is good because it's a creative writing class, so you're supposed to sort of focus very one-on-one. And none of them had ever worked with Twine. Most of them didn't have experience with interactive fiction. So it was really cool seeing what they made based off of that in sort of the week that they had. And we had one girl made a game about lemonade that will change who you are. It made a person a superhero and like how that negatively affected her life.
I'm assuming you mean Beyonce lemonade, not like lemonade the drink.
No, lemonade the drink.
Lemonade the drink.
No, just lemonade the drink. It's from Special Lemons.
Uh-huh.
And it changed, and so that was sort of an interesting sort of linear, non-linear kind of experience. And then it turns out that everyone dies at the end of games written by middle schoolers. It's choose your own adventure, so lots of people, you know, most endings end in death anyway, but mm-hmm. Just really surprised at the amount of death in games from that age group. Like, it would just be like, you turn around the corner, it's like, whoops, you're dead.
How does that work narratively, do you find?
Death or being in middle school?
I don't know, either one. I'm not sure they're so different in some respects.
It depends. If you're the middle schooler in question, probably not. It's a good way of immediately stopping action. Unless, of course, you're not stopping action, which sometimes is also the case. But it's a really good, solid, like, everyone knows that's an end point. Mm-hmm. So it makes it a really easy sort of end of the line kind of thing. If I go to a point and I'm just like, and then they were sitting on a bench, you're like, well, is it over? And if I'm like, oh, and then they're dead, you're like, well, I guess that route's done. There's zero question.
Right,
so
right.
It's a good narrative shorthand.
When you teach the class and you interact with the students mm-hmm. as they're creating the projects, what kind of feedback do you find that you typically give them, and how do they typically respond to it?
I try to focus on creative feedback rather than sort of grammar feedback, because they have regular school classes, I'm assuming. And that's going to teach them things like how to use the right, you know, verb and noun, etc. I'm more interested in encouraging them to actually create, because that's what you find when you get into older people, is that they're like, oh, and nobody ever encouraged me when I was a kid. And it's like, nope, you have no excuse. I'm going to encourage you when you are 12. I think that you are great, and what you make is great, and you should make more of it. And that's sort of my level of feedback, or that's what I try to give is my level of feedback. Everything you make, every decision you make is a great one, because you're making it and it's different and it's interesting.
And did you find that it was a strong response from the students in the class?
I think so.
Yeah, I think they were, I was there some of the time, and they seemed really kind of interested in, so Amanda kind of found some interesting works and kind of, they went through them and made decisions as a group, and then they were able to kind of take that ideas and build their own. So we were able to upload those on the website and all that. So they had a lot of fun, I think, making stuff. So,
did you find that the students in the class had any experience previously with the
they
were?
Not at all. I mean, the hard thing is on day one, when you ask questions, nobody answers questions because it's day one.
As a professor, I'm familiar with that phenomenon.
Yeah. So when you walk in and your first question is, okay, what do you know about interactive fiction? All of them just stayed silent. So either they didn't know, or it was the first day, and I'll never know if they knew. But my guess is no. Probably some experience with things like R.L. Stine and the Goosebumps series, mm-hmm. and that kind of choose-your-own-adventure, but definitely not interactive, online, like, choose-your-own-adventure stuff. And that's not surprising. It's kind of considered an older genre. It's kind of one of the first video game genres. I say it's the first. I've had debates with people on whether it is or not, because I think technically Tennis for Two predates it, but
Pong sort of but I mean, what was it, the Zork, was that?
Early, if we're talking early, we have, I think it's 1972 and Adventure, which is actually based off of Mammoth Cave.
Huh.
Wow. Yeah. So it was made by a guy, he and his wife used to come out here for Mammoth Cave, and he wanted to make an adventure game. He called it Colossal Cave Adventure, and he made it for his daughters, actually.
Very cool. So a Kentucky connection for early Choose Your Own Adventure computer game programs. Well, I'm here with Kristen from the Living Arts and Science Center, and Amanda and John from Run Jump Dev. And we'll be back after the break with some more conversation about the projects they're working on, the show that's currently up, and what they've got cooking in the future. Good morning. Listen to WRFL 88.1 Lexington. I'm the professor, and I'm filling in for Mick Jeffries on this Trivial Thursday. And I have with me today Kristen from the Living Arts and Science Center, Amanda and John from Run Jump Dev. And before we reiterate when and where the listeners can come see your program, I wanted to give just more generally ask first you and Amanda and John first about what is Run Jump Dev? How long have you been doing it? And if people are interested in what they hear in today's program or interested in what they see at the Living Arts and Science Center, how could they get involved?
Sure. So Run Jump Dev, well, we founded the nonprofit in 2013. But we've been around even longer than that. And it basically started as a group of people that were interested in video games and how to make them, getting together and just sharing what projects they were working on and learning together. And then it's sort of grown into a much larger thing now. We have several events throughout the year. We had a game developer conference when we worked with EKU to bring in, you know, international speakers. To come and talk about, you know, making games and you know, sort of the business and creative side of that. And so we just have lots of events that we try to help, you know, people that are interested in doing, you know, interactive projects, video games, starting a company for video games, or anything sort of related around gaming. So if you're interested in, you know, playing games and streaming them on online through YouTube, say, you know, we have people interested in doing that. So like the next big thing is going to be Lex Play. It's gonna be at the Lexington Convention Center in October 28th and 29th. It'll be just like a video game, probably the, you know, one of the few focused or conventions focused on you know, video games in particular. So we're gonna have you know, lots of great tournaments and all kinds of new experiences like virtual reality that you can try out. So it's really just a really open community that are people that are interested in getting involved with creative making stuff.
From all levels.
Yeah, definitely.
So we meet every Tuesday at 6 p.m. at Awesome Inc. in sort of the back room, the kitchen area, is how I usually tell people. And it's all about, we've got people who are just hobbyists who've never released a game before, who are just there to try it out. And we have probably three or four professional studios in town, and so they'll come out also to some extent. And so we've got a wide range of sort of interests and change and like skill levels. And so you've got hobbyists, you've got art game people, and you've got like, this is my job, I've been doing it since. How long has Frog Dice been around?
Because like I think
they've been
years,
yeah
think,
they've been yeah. around the longest. So you've got a good range of sort of abilities and interest, and so that's kind of cool.
So people shouldn't feel intimidated, even newbies who don't know anything about gaming already.
Yeah, yes. Definitely. Yeah, they should come out, and if they're interested, they can get involved and learn. And there's something for everyone. So they can go to runjumpdev.org is our website. So that's runjumpdev.org to find out like all the events
and
that we're doing.
We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're not on Instagram or anything. But
what are your respective roles in the organization, or is it more of a loose organization?
No, we have an organization. John's a board member. I'm a volunteer. I've been working with the organization for, I want to say, 3 years.
Yeah. So, yeah, we kind of have a board of directors that help, do some structures like, you know, go after grants and things that help us, you know, hold events and help people that are interested in doing things. So, are looking to, you know, expand. And so we have groups that are kind of within the organization that are focusing on particular projects. So we have a group that's doing a virtual reality Halloween project. So they're all meeting every week and working together on that. And then we have people that are just kind of working on their own thing, and we're just assisting. And like Lex Play is an event for getting them to all be able to show off what they're doing and get people in the community to see all the neat games that people are making. So,
very cool. Kristen, can you tell us a little something about the Living Arts and Sciences Center, your role there, and also about the show, and just kind of those nagging practical questions that listeners might have about when they can go and when they can see it and for how long?
Of course, yeah. So I'm the marketing director at the Living Arts and Science Center. Right now we are in the middle, I think actually smack dab in the middle of our summer classes. So we offer classes from preschool to high school, over 140 classes at the Living Arts and Science Center. And drawing and painting and then digital art, like we've been talking about, making movies, they're making cardboard costumes, there's pottery, Chinese dance, all kinds of crazy stuff. So you can find out about those classes and all of our events at lasclex.org. Coming up on July 15th is Gallery Hop, and that would be an excellent time to come see the Rules and Play show at the Living Arts and Science Center, because that's when we'll have the virtual reality games there. Mm-hmm. The interactive game that's set up in the planetarium will be there at Gallery Hop, so that's July 15th. Otherwise, we are open during the day from 8 to 5:30. We have a discovery night coming up next Thursday, and that's going to be live animals, which is always fun. We have live animals in our gallery with our Rules and Play exhibit. But that would be a time to
Be software and wetware, huh?
Yeah, yes. We always get into a strange mix of things at the Living Arts and Science Center, and that's a good example of it. But that is always a really fun time to come out and see. I think there's going to be a wallaby and some other exotic animals there.
You guys have animals around anyway. When I was there for the gallery opening, one of the guys I brought was really excited to see the chameleon.
Yeah, so we have a chameleon who's named Huey, and he's there all the time. The animals are super popular with the kids, and it's fun for us because we are on 4th Street and Martin Luther King, and the neighborhood kids love to come in and see our animals, and that's always a big draw. So that is next Thursday evening from 6 to 8. And
then you have a moon rock, which is really cool.
Yeah, so we have an exhibit now on space, too. And there in that exhibit, we have a moon rock that's on loan from NASA. So it was collected by Apollo 17.
Huh.
That's really interesting. And so we have all kinds of a real wide range of things happening, something for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. LASCLEX.org, all that information is there.
Excellent, excellent. So it sounds like Gallery Hop would be a great time to see this show. How long is it going to be up for?
So it opened on June the 24th, and it ends on August the 26th. So it's going to be there for a pretty good chunk of time.
Great.
which was one of the things we're really excited about.
There's no excuse for not going. You've got plenty of time to check it out. Okay, and if people want to get involved with Run Jump Dev again as well, maybe you could just remind them how they can find it and when the meetings are.
Yeah, runjumpdev.org is probably the easiest way to get in touch with us, or on Twitter at runjumpdev.org, or just at runjumpdev. And then, Tuesday nights is a great meeting, so Tuesday night at Awesome Inc. downtown on Main Street is where we have our meetings.
6 p.m., you said?
6:30, 7. It's kind of just an open work
night.
We
usually tell new people to show up a bit later because we're not good at showing up on time.
Yeah, right. The worst thing for somebody is to walk in and be the first person there.
So at 7, we kind of have regular, scheduled things where we show off projects that people are working on. So that's a great time to get there around 7.
Very cool. My guests have been Kristen from the Living Arts and Science Center and Amanda and John from Run Jump Dev. They've been talking about this cool new interactive gaming virtual reality digital art program at the Living Arts and Sciences Theater. And I gotta say, sounds like something I ought to be visiting myself. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Thank you. Thanks.